through the very most important part of advocating for yourself this week on my series, Tips for Advocating for Yourself During Birth. And that is doing your birth research. Today, we're going to talk about four basic tips that you can use when doing birth research to ensure that your research is reliable and accurate. Hey friends, my name is Emily, and I'm your birth advocate. I'm a labor and delivery nurse that has a passion for helping birthers advocate for themselves against the toxic cultures of labor. I teach you the most up-to-date research surrounding pregnancy and birth, give you tips and tricks I have learned in my profession, and empower you to take back your rights as a birther. So welcome. Keep listening for authentic tips and evidence-based information you can count on. This is your Birth Advocate, the podcast. What is up, everyone? I hope that you guys are having a great week, and I hope that you are enjoying this series on the launch of my podcast. I know it's a lot to launch with four podcasts, but I just wanted you guys to get a full take on what this podcast has to offer and be able to do a little bit of binging, because that is my favorite way to take in podcasts or TV episodes or any kind of media, really. So we're on our third tip for advocating for ourselves this week, and this one is probably my favorite topic and something that I am the most passionate about in my nursing profession and in my work with my clients and in everything that I tell you guys on my Instagram and my TikTok, and that is doing your research. Research is so important, and I, throughout school, found a love for research. I am a little bit of a research nerd, and because of that, I know that it can be really scary and intimidating to pull up a research article and not really know what you're supposed to be looking at, if it's even valid for what you're trying to find out, and it just can get really overwhelming very fast. So today, we're going to cover why I think research is important and how you can use it in making decisions for your care and how to find good research. I know I said that there's only four tips, but there's actually five, so my bad. And at the end of this podcast, we're actually gonna go find some research together. So if you listen through to the end, you can follow along with me while we look up some research on macrosomia or having a big baby. So stay tuned and get ready for lots of information. Take some notes, or just listen to it over and over and over again. So first of all, I think it's important to talk about why I'm so obsessed with research and why it's so important for you, the birther, in making decisions. First of all, yes, your doctor should be your expert opinion. They have went to medical school. They have years and years of education behind them. They should be keeping up on the most recent evidence and the most up-to-date care recommendations, and you should be able to trust their opinion. But first of all, that's not always the case. And one of the things that people always spout in my comment section about trusting providers is find a provider you trust, find a provider you trust. And honestly, I think we all need to take a second to realize that that is a privilege. It is a privilege to A, have a choice between different providers, and B, have a provider that you trust in those choices. And not all of us have that privilege. So it's good to have research to solidify what your good providers are saying or help you decide if they are following the current recommendations and following the research that's out there for them. Anyways, it's just good to always have information from more than one source. In life, you're never going to just take the first thing that you hear and run with it. For example, if you're thinking about moving to a new city, you're not going to just talk to one friend that lives there and loves it and then be like, yeah, okay, they said they loved it. They live there. That seems like a good source. Let's go. Let's move. No, you're also going to go online and research the school districts, research the jobs that are available, research the crime rates. Like, you're going to get information from more than one source before you just make a major decision. And birth should be no different. Another great thing about doing your own research and educating yourself on what's out there is that you are much more equipped to ask your doctor why. So when they recommend something like an induction at 39 weeks, you can say, why do you recommend that? And when they give you your answer, and if you already have done research on it, or you go and do research on it, and what they're telling you is not matching up with what you're reading, you can say specifically, I am just wondering why you're recommending an induction for macrosomia at 39 weeks, because the research here does not support that. So could you explain to me why your recommendation is going against research that I found? And they may have a really good explanation that you agree with for why they're still recommending an induction. Or it might break down their argument and you'll be able to tell really fast that they're just not following recommendations. So it's kind of just a good starting point for a conversation between you and your provider, whether that conversation is going to lead to you totally agreeing with them and trusting them even more, or whether that conversation is going to lead to you being able to advocate for a different treatment plan in yourself. Also, research compared to just random internet advice is so important to be able to decipher from. You should always be following research over internet advice. Now, I mean, you can look at articles online that provide research to support what they're saying, but you should always be following the research. So if you just simply Google something and it says, hey, this is what you should eat while you're pregnant, they should have some sort of resources to back up what they're saying. And if they don't, that's a huge red flag. And if they do, don't just be like, oh, hey, they said that I should eat a bunch of tuna when I'm pregnant. And, oh, look, they cited this source, so that must be good. No, you want to make sure that it's good research, not just one source that they found where there's one sentence in this research article that may support somewhat of what they're saying, which is what sometimes those articles online will do to make it sound like they're giving you good information. And again, if you can have your doctor's expert opinion and good, reliable research that backs up that opinion, then you can feel very confident that you're doing what's best for you and your baby. This research is not meant to totally derail everything that a doctor says or a provider says. This research is really meant to just make sure that you are 1,000% confident in your decision, no matter if it's going with what the doctor is recommending or if it's kind of making your own treatment plan. The research plus the doctor's advice should really make you feel confident in your decision. So let's get started with my top 5 tips for finding good research. This is not inclusive. I mean, in college, you take whole classes on finding research and making sure that it's good and the ins and outs of statistical analysis and whatnot. But we don't have time to get into all of that today. So this is kind of just a tidbit of information that I can give you to help try to make sure that you're getting the right information and reliable information. So first of all, like we talked about earlier, make sure that you are looking for research when you're Googling online, because I'm sure most of you are going to be getting your research from the Google. So that's fine. But if you're looking for information, do not just simply input, let's say, inductions. You need to put induction research. Now, that's a very vague thing to research, so the more specific that you can get, the better. So inductions for IUGR research. Make sure that it says research in your title of your Google. Now, you'll see this when we go along together and research macrosomia, but that's my first tip. We are not looking for website articles. We are looking for research articles. Now, a lot of times, these research articles will not give you the whole article without paying for it. Now, you don't need to go out and buy the whole research article if you don't want to. Most research articles will have an abstract, a summary, a conclusion on the little preview, and that will give you a lot of information, and I'll kind of show you how that plays out later when we go through the research together. But it's important to know what to do with that information and to know how much of it you can count on, but you don't always have to buy the research articles. So tip number 2 kind of goes with that, and that's look at the summary and the conclusion. So the summary will kind of give you an idea of what the research article is about, what they were trying to find out, how big their study was, and the general results. The conclusion will give you how they've interpreted their data. Usually it will also say how confident they are in that data. So, for example, if it is a small research study that was limited, they may say, these are the conclusions of the research, but more research would have to be done to determine the complete effects of Pitocin after delivery, just for an example. So that is another way that you can kind of see those keywords to know how reliable was this research and how much stock you should put in it. Now, all research articles are deemed equal and should be used to help you make choices in your birth. The third and fourth tip that I have are talking about what kind of research studies you should be looking for. Specifics that cue you in to that they're going to be the most reliable and the most accurate. The first one is, how big was the research study? How many participants were there? If you see an article with tens of thousands of research participants, but then you see another article with 100 research participants, that big study is going to be much more reliable than the small study. The more people that you have, or the more circumstances that you have being taken into account, the more reliable and the more representative it is of the entire population. A small research study is not going to compare, of 100 people, is not going to compare enough situations to really come out with a good outcome. And most of the time, those small research studies are the ones that are going to tell you that the data was not enough to come up with a solid conclusion. More research needs to be done. So definitely be looking for research studies with tens of thousands of people. Also, make sure that when you're reading, it might say that they looked at 10,000 people, but this many were excluded for these reasons. So it's really the end amount that you're looking for. How many people actually went into the results of the study? Now, on the other coin, you're looking for big studies, but you're also looking for the most current information. So in science, in the medical field, we say we want it to be within 5 years to be relevant, because things change. I'm sure even in the last 5 years of me being an L&D nurse, things have changed in the medical world. There's more things available. New research has come out to dispute old research. So you definitely want to be looking at, within the last 5 years, the most current research studies. This can be hard to do. So if there's not one in the last 5 years, just make sure you're really digging through the internet to find the most current stuff. And for my very last tip on finding research, we want to not only find current research studies with lots of participants for the most accurate results, to really test if this research was true and if there weren't outliers that affected the results. It would be excellent if there were more than one research article out there that had similar or the same results. So if two or three studies have all stated that increased time on Pitocin leads to a higher risk of postpartum hemorrhage, then you can pretty reliably say that the longer you are in Pitocin, the higher risk you have for hemorrhage. But if only one research study out there is saying that the longer you're on Pitocin doesn't affect your hemorrhage risk, then you can see that one result is more reliable than another result, because multiple people from different organizations have deemed the same thing versus the one research study that maybe had some sort of outlier that affected the postpartum hemorrhage rate. And again, these are just quick examples. There's a lot more that goes into research and statistical analysis, but for your purposes and to not be super overwhelmed with the information, those five tips are where to start. And a lot of times, if the research that somebody did produce results, but they weren't statistically significant, they will say that in there. They will say there was not a statistically significant difference in the results, which means that even though maybe this was slightly more likely to happen than this, it wasn't a big enough difference to really give an opinion, more or less the same result. So I really hope that those five tips are going to be helpful for you. Like I said, it's just scratching the surface on research, but I hope that'll help you kind of find a place to start in looking at birth research and birth education. Now, I know earlier I said that you shouldn't just Google something and take whatever result comes up, but there are a couple organizations and a couple websites that are reliable. And I'm going to go over just those couple with you today so you know if you see those that you can kind of count on them. The first one would be ACOG, American College of Obstetrics and Gynecologists. This is the governing organizations for OBGYNs. They have a lot of practice recommendations on their website, and some OBGYNs don't even follow these recommendations, and that's a huge red flag because ACOG's organization is still pretty conservative on changing their statements for the research, but they do okay. So if you see information on this, if you see an article on from this website, you can at least know that it is reliable. The next one is AWON, Association of Women's Health Obstetric and Neonatal Nurses. I find that their practice statements tend to be the most up-to-date on the research. Another great one is UpToDate. That is a website that literally breaks down all of the information for you based on just what the research says. So that is where I go for most of my information, especially the things that I present to you guys on TikTok and on Instagram. Most of my information comes from there, and I'm lucky that I have access to the full website. It is a subscription-based website. There is limited information that you can have without being subscribed. Another really great resource that has a lot of the care bundles that hospitals follow. One that I use to show people the failure to progress C-section criteria a lot, but they have other things on there as well. It is the California Maternal Quality Care Collaborative. They have a ton of information on there, a ton of bundles that are meant for hospitals to implement. But in looking at those bundles, it's really easy to see what the standard of care is. Now, my last recommendation for something that I use as a go-to for research and information all the time is the NCBI. It's the National Center for Biotechnology Information. And usually when you Google something with the word research behind it, there will be several articles that come up under NCBI's hub. And that's just another great place that focuses on research. So I hope with those recommendations and the tips I gave you, it will kind of start your journey on finding birth research instead of focusing on just what your doctor says or what the mommy blogs say or what the Instagram people say. Even though, you know, I am an Instagram educator for childbirth, it still should not be your only resource for education. It's really important to find multiple sources of information when you're making a decision, especially one as big as childbirth. Okay, so for this very last segment, instead of a question, we are going to do a little follow me along while we do research thing. This is meant for you to follow along with me. I do understand that because Google is so smart, our results may not be exactly the same. You should at least be able to piece together what I'm doing and my thought process when I am looking for research. So, first things first, get out your phone or your computer or whatever you're going to do this on and pull up Google, because that's exactly what I do. I pull up Google. Second, we are going to be researching today macrosomia. Macrosomia is when they suspect that you have a big baby in your belly. Typically, this is done by them putting their hands on your belly and trying to estimate the fetal weight by Leopold's, or you got an ultrasound and that is showing that you have a big baby. You maybe have some risk factors. All these go into it. But macrosomia is the suspected big baby. And we're just going to pretend like I just got diagnosed with macrosomia. And now I got home from my appointment and I'm like, oh my God, I don't even think I know what macrosomia really is. I don't know how it can affect my pregnancy. I don't know. I'm not sure. So here we go. First, I just simply typed macrosomia research into Google. That's all. You will see one section that says scholarly articles for macrosomia research. That is a great place to start. But then right below that, you'll see some other things. When you scroll down, one of them is fetal macrosomia, risk factors, maternal and perinatal outcomes. That's from the NCBI organization that we talked about earlier. Keep scrolling, you're seeing lots of different things, all research articles, so all good. A couple things to note is when these things were written. So the first one from the NCBI, you'll see it was from 2013. It's a little more than 5 years ago, but it was cited by 126 other research articles. So this is something I didn't talk about in my tips, but is honestly a very good tip. Most of these should somewhere say how many other research articles cited this one. And that's another great indicator that it's a good research article. Some things to take into consideration, though, is this article was written in 2013 and it was cited by 126 other research articles. But if you go down to, let's say, I have another one called Biomarkers for Macrosomia Prediction, and it was in 2018, but it was only cited by 16 or other articles. And that's likely because it's 5 years older. It is more recent research. So it just hasn't had the opportunity to be cited by others. So that's just kind of what we're looking at. Now, here is a great point. So you'll see here, I hope, if you scroll down far enough, there's an article by mayoclinic.org, and it's Fetal Macrosomia Symptoms and Causes, May 29th, 2020. So it's very recent, but when you look at it, you're like, okay, here's some symptoms, some causes, some risk factors. This is all really good information, but it's not research. And they also don't cite any research. I'm not saying that what they put out there is wrong because it is the Mayo Clinic. It's probably reliable, but this is the kind of thing that you can look at, but don't take it for research because it's not research. If you just want some general information, it all looks pretty accurate, but it's different than research, just to point that out there. So we're going to scroll back up to the top and let's look at this maternal and neonatal complications of fetal macrosomia, a cohort study from 2019. It is from a journal, so that's great. It says the objective is to estimate the risk of maternal neonatal complications in pregnancy. So it was a retrospective cohort study designed at a large maternity unit, which just basically means that they collected data from other pregnancies that already happened. It wasn't something they said, I want to do research on this, and now I'm going to start the research today. It was something they looked back on. Kind of described their methods. So the study population of 35,000 pregnancies. So that is a pretty big number, but only 4,500 had macrosomia. So they're saying that they looked at 35,000 pregnancies and 4,500 of them around actually had the macrosomia. So they're looking at that. And then in the conclusions, you can see macrosomia is associated with serious adverse perinatal outcomes. This study provides accurate estimates of risk to aid in pregnancy management. So we're going to just kind of scroll. They had an introduction, their methods, the statistical analysis, the results. It says that 41,000 women were booked for delivery at our hospital. Of these, 4,100 pregnancies were excluded. So they go through what was excluded. They go through total amount that they actually looked at, how many of those had macrosomia. That's good to look at because that kind of tells you, like, did they do those exclusions that could skew results? And it looked like they did. Now, here's another great part to look at on research articles if you can get a hold of the whole thing. If you scroll down, it says discussion. So then it's going to talk about the findings. The results of the study demonstrated that pregnancies with macrosomia are associated with significantly increased risk for serious maternal and neonatal outcomes, including C-section for failure to progress, severe postpartum hemorrhage, shoulder dystocia, birth fractures, and HIE. The risk of complications is relatively low until birth weight of 4,000 grams is reached, and it increases after that. So it's going to talk about the strengths and limitations of the study. So the strengths was a very large study. They were screened. It was an accurate ascertainment of maternal and neonatal adverse outcomes. It broke down the risks. All of those things were great about the study. The limitations, which I was going to talk to you about, is that this was a single center study. So this was a study from one hospital. Now, every hospital has their own culture, and the doctors tend to do similar things. So that is a bit of a limitation. It's better if you have a study from multiple different hospitals in multiple different areas. Okay, so let's say you've looked at that research article, you're like, okay, I think I have an understanding of what my risks are, what the baby's risks are. But I've heard a lot of people were predicted to have a big baby and their baby wasn't even that big. Like, I care about myself, I care about my baby, but like, what if I go forward with induction, like my doctor's currently recommending, and the baby isn't even that big? And then I feel like maybe I made the wrong choice. You know what? I think next I'm going to research inductions for macrosomia. First thing that comes up is an ACOG issues guidelines for fetal macrosomia. You're like, oh, Emily said ACOG is sometimes a great resource. I think I'm just going to click on that. Says the term fetal macrosomia implies to fetal growth beyond a specific weight. I already know that. So you're kind of scrolling down. Oh, it's going over risk factors, everything that you read that. Oh, summary of recommendations if you scroll down. ACOG committee provides the following recommendations for management of fetal macrosomia. The diagnosis of fetal macrosomia is imprecise. For suspected fetal macrosomia, the accuracy of estimated fetal weight using ultrasound is no better than that obtained with clinical palpation. Oh, it says recommendations based on limited or inconsistent scientific evidence. Suspected macrosomia is not an indication for induction of labor because induction does not improve maternal or fetal outcomes. Labor and vaginal delivery are not contraindicated for women with fetal estimate weights up to 5,000 grams in the absence of maternal diabetes. I don't have diabetes. Oh, so it's not even recommended by ACOG for me to be induced for fetal macrosomia because my baby is only estimated to be about 4,000 grams. So you can see how I used a couple different ways that I talked about in this podcast to come to that conclusion and to support my thoughts on it. Now, you have to keep yourself in check because sometimes when you have an opinion about something or you've heard things, you'll try to find evidence to support what you think. Try not to do that. And this is just like the start. You should keep going. This isn't where your research ends, but you can see how first I looked at the research article and I did find some really scary things about fetal macrosomia. And then I was like, well, let's just see what else is out there. And then I went and I looked at the ACOG organization and what they recommended. And even though those scary things are there, they're still not recommending induction. So from there, I'd probably move on to see if I can find more information, more people that support ACOG's or don't support ACOG's recommendation. And that's how I would make my final decision. So I hope that this was helpful for you. I know that your Google search may not have come up with the same things as mine did. And if they didn't, it may have been hard to follow me because I was kind of just summarizing what I was seeing to show you where my brain goes when I'm looking up research. So this is all a great place to start, and I hope that it helps you find the research to add to your toolbox of decision making. That's really what we're trying to do here. We're trying to add to our toolbox of decision making. We have our doctor's expert advice. We have our intuition and what we feel about it. We have our research. We have practice guidelines put out by organizations. And all of these we wrap into our toolbox to make the best decision for us. So that's it for today, guys. I know that this was kind of a heavy podcast episode with lots of just information that a lot of people may not have found exciting or interesting, but I promise that it was probably the most helpful out of the four tips for advocating for yourself practically to start to form how you're going to approach your care. So although I know it's not the most exciting, I hope that you listened to it and I hope that you got some good information on it. Thank you guys again for listening. The next episode, which is already up, is the last in my four tips for advocating for yourself. And it's about advocating in action. So this is what I think is the best way to advocate for yourself when you're there in the hospital. Practical tips to help you advocate for yourself while you're in labor. So it kind of just wraps everything up in a bow of this little mini series that I did for you guys. So please check it out. As always, please subscribe to the podcast. Follow me on Instagram and TikTok at Your Birth Advocate. I love hearing from you guys. I love to hear what you want to know. If you liked the podcast, please let me know. If you didn't like it, please let me know because I do this for you guys. And if it's not helpful for you, then there's no point to do it. So let me know your feedback. I'll see you in the next one. Bye, guys.